Welcome once again to the psychedelicparenting.org podcast. As always, I am your host, Jonathan. I would like to apologize for the lateness of this week's show. With all the preparations that have gone into packing and traveling and readying my presentation for the third annual Exploring Psychedelics Conference at Southern Oregon University, getting this podcast out to you on Tuesday night became an impossibility. However, we have an incredible interview to bring to you this week, and I'm taking a few minutes away from the conference today to record this introduction and make sure that our guest's inspiring story is heard this week. If you're in Northern California or Southern Oregon, please come to join us for an amazing collection of artists and speakers. I'll be speaking tomorrow morning, Friday, April 8th, about the tools for talking to your kids about cannabis. I'd like to also give a shout out to the kind and informative folks at Grateful Meds Dispensary in Talent, Oregon, where I purchased my first ever legal recreational cannabis yesterday afternoon. I would also like to thank my dear friend Harmony Haney and her partner Sean for opening their home to me as a place to stay during the conference. Before we begin, I want to give you an update on the goal that we set 2 weeks ago to reach 1,000 page likes on Psychedelic Parenting's Facebook page. I'm very happy to announce that this goal was not only reached, but surpassed. In only 8 days, with all of your help, we went from 648 to 1,017 page likes. We are now connected on Facebook to people on every continent on the globe. But we are not done reaching out or building community. If you know anyone who might be interested in this work, please invite them to visit our page and listen to a podcast. If you're interested in going deeper down the rabbit hole, join our mailing list or reach out to join our secret Facebook group where deeper discussions into the issues of family life and entheogenic experiences are welcome. A link to our mailing list is available on the program notes to this podcast. And if you find value in this program or in our resources, please consider a tax-deductible gift to this work through our fiscal sponsor, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, by clicking on the big purple donate button in the program notes to this show. Now I would like to welcome to the show someone that I'm humbled and blessed to introduce to you. His name is John Bridge, and although he does not have the credentials of some of my recent guests, his experience is worth 1,000 degrees and titles. While John is deeply humble, he is showing incredible bravery in his willingness to come out as a psychedelic person using his real name and exemplifying radical honesty by sharing his story of how he healed himself of a lifelong mental illness caused by an undiagnosed traumatic brain injury in childhood. John and I met on Facebook, and he had an interesting story that captured me the first moment that I heard it, and I wanted to bring him on and have him share it with even more people because I think it's really inspiring. It really talks about the potential of these sacraments for changing our lives. So welcome to Psychedelic Parenting, John.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. I'm very happy to be here, to be honest with you. I've been quite excited. So
right on.
I look forward to sharing my story, and hopefully we can get this out to some other people.
Sweet. So why don't you start out just by telling us a little bit about yourself generally, and then we'll lead into your story.
Yeah, for sure. So nothing too exciting about me. I'm just a regular guy. I'm 34 years old. I live in Ontario, Canada. I have a job in retail. I just do my thing. I used to be a very, very sad man, and now I am not so much. I've done a lot of things to change myself, and psychedelics were a major part of that. So.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess I can get into my story now if you'd like, and we
can
go
from
there. So when I was 12 years old and I hit puberty, I knew there was something different about me. I knew that something was happening to other people around me that wasn't necessarily happening to me. And it was really confusing time because I didn't know what to say or who to go to for help. And eventually I started to act differently. I started to alienate myself. I started to, since I knew I was different, show people that I was different. I ended up with piercings all over my face, green hair, all kinds of crazy stuff because I didn't know who I was or I didn't know what I was supposed to be. So through the years of alienation as a teenager, I got sad and lonely, and I still had friends and I still did pretty well for myself because I can talk. I wasn't a bad looking guy, so people still liked me. You know, there could have been a lot worse situations for me, but when you're trapped inside a prison, inside your own head, it doesn't matter what's on the outside because what's on the inside is how we all truly live our lives. So I could project something, but that wasn't necessarily what I was truly living through. So So my teenage years were quite difficult. I managed to get through those. I was quite lonely because, as I said, we're all kind of lonely inside our own heads. But I eventually made it through, and I met my wife when I was 23 years old, and it was a stroke of fate to meet her. And we eventually had kids not too long after we met, 2 years or so maybe. And during that time, I was in rough shape. I didn't know how I was going to be a parent and how I was going to give my kids a strong background and a strong way to grow up if I didn't understand myself and I didn't even know what was wrong with me. So I started to slip from kind of an unhappy guy with a temper that was off the handle occasionally to somebody who couldn't control his own emotions in the slightest after that. So I was about 25 years old at this time, 26 perhaps, and I decided that I needed some help. So I went to see my family doctor, and he didn't really think that there was anything wrong with me, because once again, I can project something that's a lot different than what I'm living inside. So he didn't think there was anything wrong with me, but he decided to prescribe me something anyways, of course. So I got prescribed a small dose, 5 milligrams of a drug called Cipralex. And it didn't really do anything for me. If anything, I would say that it actually hindered any progress that I would have made using perhaps talk therapy or another way to heal myself. But anyways, I went back and I said, this isn't working. He gave me a 10 milligram dose instead and said that this would be what would help me out.
Sure,
So
more is always better, right?
oh, of course. Let's fill me up on them, right? So after a few weeks on that, because the SSRIs take a couple weeks to work, I went back and I still wasn't in good shape, probably getting worse. So he decided to give me 20 milligrams of Cipralex, the highest that he could dose me. And I went back home and I started to get in real bad shape. My mind started to go. And I went back to him, and once again, he decided that he would just up my dose again, this time by giving me 200 milligrams of tryptophan on top of my Cipralex, because that was going to help boost the Cipralex and increase its effectiveness. So that totally sent me for a loop. That was not a good thing, and I don't appreciate that happening to me. But anyways, I pretty much lost all control. I couldn't function normally. I was crying. I was in tears. I didn't care for myself one bit. I would look in the mirror. I would, tell me how much I hated myself. I would tell me how much I was stupid, how bad of a parent I was, how terrible of a friend I was, that I was the worst husband. And I started to really slip. And when you start to talk down to yourself, things can never progress forward. You're only going to go backwards. So anyways, I got a crisis manager, a case manager, to help me out, and she went to the doctor with me and insisted that I get put in the psych ward. And eventually, after much prodding, he decided that he would put me into the psych ward so that we could figure what was going on with me. And we didn't think that the family doctor was going to be sufficient, so we decided to go with a psychiatrist. And this was the quickest way for me to get a psychiatrist. So I put myself in, and after a couple days on new meds, I was then diagnosed as bipolar and not just a depressed person. I was put onto 1800 milligrams of lithium, which is a pretty high dose. I don't know anybody after doing research that had been on that high of a dose, but I was on an 1800 milligram a day lithium regimen. And for a year, that actually kept me fairly stable. It kept me in a spot where I was able to function and able to do things. But after 1 year, things started to slip again. So I went back to my psychiatrist. Well, I had been seeing my psychiatrist monthly or every few weeks for almost that whole year. I went and I said I needed something else, or I needed some help, because I was in a bad spot. So I was dosed then with 300 milligrams of Seroquel. And if anybody out there knows anything about Seroquel is a pretty powerful drug, and it's not a drug that you should be put on at a high dose and left on. But I was put on Seroquel and my lithium as well still for a long time. And those drugs are both pretty potent. You need to get your blood work done on lithium. You can't, you have to watch your diet. You have to watch your water intake. You have to do a lot of things. with lithium. Mm-hmm. And Seroquel is just a monster. That one, if you don't do it right, you're not going to be able to function right.
But oh my Lord.
I figured out how to do it eventually, that I would have to take it just before bed and sleep and plan for almost a 12-hour sleep before I could get up and function. And once I did that and learned how to use it, I was fairly successful in controlling my emotions. But, you know, that lasted for a year or two. And then I started to fade again. And I went back to my psychiatrist and he decided that we would go on an antidepressant as well. So I was then put on 100 milligrams of Wellbutrin. So now I'm on the three meds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I'm stable, but I've stabilized on the low side. And things are doing okay, but things aren't great. You know, like me and my wife, we've got a good relationship, but, you know, like we're not passionate with each other. We've got the kids, we've got everything else. And, you know, things are just progressing, perhaps. How, you know, if somebody on the outside saw it, they would think that it was still an okay life. But it was, you know, inside my own head, as I said earlier, I was living in something that wasn't fun. So I went back again, and now he decided to put me on another antidepressant. So I'm on two, and this was citalopram.
Yeah, citalopram, yep.
Yeah, I was put on, and it was just a small 5-milligram dose. So now I'm on two different antidepressants and two other mood stabilizers. And so I'm going, and now it's been a couple years and I'm trying this regimen and I'm still low. I'm still stable now, not up and down like I was perhaps in the past, but I'm not in a really happy spot. I wake up and the sun's not shining on my face. It's a dark cloud hanging over my head. So every day is the same. And I kind of walk through as in a photocopy, I guess you could say. Nothing is shimmering for me.
Sure.
So I eventually decide that I don't want to be on all these meds if I'm going to be in a bad spot anyways. So I quit my medication. I quit them all in a silly manner. I probably should have asked for help or told people what I was doing, but I decided to quit each one individually and work my way up to quitting Seroquel. So I quit my antidepressants right away, and then I quit lithium, and then I quit Seroquel. And quitting Seroquel was quite a devastating thing. I probably was unsafe during that, but things happen, and when you're ready to take a stand for yourself, you do. And whether it's unsafe or whether it's safe, it all depends on your outlook on it, I guess. I wasn't in a great spot inside my head, so taking a risk was an okay thing for me, I thought. So I quit my Seroquel. I went through some quite bad withdrawals with that, and things happened, but I did it. And shortly after that, that would have been in February of 2012, I believe. I quit those, I did some things, and then in June of that same year, I lost my wife. And I didn't lose my wife because I quit my meds. I lost my wife because, as I said earlier, we didn't have a passion. We lost a lot of things. And it didn't have anything to do with the medications being quit, but it had a lot to do with my disorder and the way I was progressing as a human being. I wasn't the same man that she had married. And even though I had problems back then, I was not perhaps the greatest husband or the easiest person to live with. But, you know, like I hold no grudges. And anyways, after June, then she had left and she took the kids, but I still got to see my kids. It wasn't like my kids were taken from me. She just was the main caregiver. And after that, in September of that same year, I lost my job. And
Everything at once. Jesus.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So perhaps you could say that one was medication related, perhaps not. But as I said earlier, I had quite a temper that was at any time ready to fly off the handle for whatever reason it may be. So sometimes it was a little, sometimes it was big. But I was quite aggravated at work one day, and I decided that some people needed to hear what my opinion was on some things. And they didn't, they didn't take too kindly to that, understandably, right? So,
sure.
So this is now September of 2012. I've lost my wife and I've lost my job. And then in November of that year, I went bankrupt. So eventually I lost my house too. And,
Lord.
So a few things pile up and I'm still unmedicated at this point, but I make it through the winter, which is always a tough time for me.
Sure.
And I make it until April of 2013. And I end up in a pretty bad spot, probably one of the worst spots I'd been in my life. I probably pushed off things that I should have dealt with in 2012, and they eventually piled up in the spring of 2013. So I went back to the hospital, and this time they gave me a different psychiatrist with a different cocktail of medication. I was on Divalpro-X, and I forget what my antidepressant was, but I believe it was the 100 milligrams of Wellbutrin again. And the reason I forget is because I didn't stay on them very long this time. I didn't believe in the pharmaceutical meds. The only thing that I believed in them was that if I believed in them, they would help me, essentially, right? Like it was, I believed that the placebo was a greater effect than what the actual medications were doing.
Sure.
So I didn't stay on them that long, and you know, things happened. And then a year later, again, I'm back in the hospital for the fourth time. And they give me the same cocktail of medications that I tried in 2013, and they didn't really work, I wouldn't say. So I once again gave them up. And a lot of things were happening at this point in time. I gave up my place on my own. I was living on my own with my kids part-time, and I couldn't handle that anymore. So I moved in with my dad into his basement. And so I'm in the basement, I'm doing my thing, and I've quit my medications. And I guess at this point in time, it would have been perhaps better to say that 3 years ago, I got an email from WebMD touting ketamine as the new wonder cure for depression and different episodes. So I was quite into that. I decided to look into it, but ketamine's not an easy drug to get around this area. It's not something that, you know, like it's, you know, it's not, no doctor is going to give it to me by any means. You know, I didn't really have any opportunity to use ketamine. So I tried its relative dextromethorphan, which is just an active ingredient in cough syrup.
Right.
Thinking that it would help me out, but it didn't necessarily do anything for me, but I gave it a shot. So anyways, I'm doing some research on different alternative treatments, and I come across some interesting things about psilocybin. And psilocybin as a teenager was always something that I enjoyed. I always dabbled in it a little bit. I had some buddies that enjoyed it. Even in my early 20s, I dabbled in it a little bit. I tried, you know, like before I was married, I didn't really... Or I did it a little bit more than after I was married. I don't even believe that I did it. So I eventually, during times in between hospital visits and this and that, I decided that I would try to use psilocybin. I knew how to get some. So I tried it maybe once every 6 months, a medium range dose, and nothing really happened to me that would have rocked my world or changed anything for me. I always had a good time. I always made sure I was safe. I always, you know, took the proper precautions for somebody who maybe was a little under the weather mentally or to be able to take psilocybin, you know, like I wasn't being silly about it, but I also probably in the eyes of some, once again, wasn't being the safest, but I believe that I was being safe enough because I was in a pretty bad spot. But so then fast forward back again to moving into my dad's basement and doing my thing there. I had once again quit all my medications and decided that I would give psilocybin a shot. And this time I was medication free, which wasn't going to interfere with the psilocybin. I ate a cannabis edible and I ate 4 grams of psilocybin cubensis. And I shut the door to my bedroom in the basement. I told myself, no matter what happens, I can't leave that room because, you know, my dad is living upstairs and this is out of respect to him. I don't need anything weird happening. You know, this is totally for me personally. And I ingested them. And about an hour later, my world started to change. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners here have tried psilocybin or know the effects or know a little bit about it. But I had never been where I went, and I don't even know if I'd ever went there again. And I've had some pretty intense experiences since. But this trip was unexpected. I wasn't necessarily ready for it, but something beautiful came out of that. Essentially, I learned about myself on that trip, whereas previous times experimenting with psilocybin, I was in a party setting when I was a teenager or in my apartment, I was on medications. This time I was in a clear state all by myself and ready to be taught from the sacred teacher. And it grabbed a hold of me and shook me really good. And it told me, some people would say that I told myself, but I believe the sacred teacher told me a very important point about myself. And when I learned that point, it shook me to the core. It made me realize some things about myself that if I decided to put that into play the very next day when I woke up from my magical journey, that I was going to be able to progress as a human being. So when I went to bed and woke up the next day, I started right away learning from the teachings of the mushroom. And as soon as I did that, my life brightened. I started to get happier. I started to appreciate myself more. I started to feel like I was living on Earth with a purpose instead of just drifting through, floating through, waiting for myself to kill myself. Essentially is what I was doing. Like, and I would tell people like I was suicidal, and they're like, "Oh no, you got kids, you got kids." So I was like, okay, you know, that maybe is a bad thing to do to your children, is to kill yourself. So I decided that I was going to wait until I was 50 years old. And when I turned 50, I was going to sit my adult children down and say, "Listen, guys, daddy's been sick for a long time. Daddy's stepping out. I've went far." Yeah. And that was my plan, because everybody said as a 30-year-old, you can't kill yourself. So I said, okay, as a 50-year-old, there's no way you guys can stop me then. So that was my plan. But anyways, the day after my great psilocybin journey, I decided to put the things that I learned about myself into play. And sure enough, they made me happy. I started to work at being a better person. I started to change my ideas of myself quite a bit. And I tripped again, and I learned something again. And it was the most beautiful thing, because I could put it into play. And I started to research more what was going on. I started to reach out to others and try to find the others, as Terrence says. And I started to find a few people, and it was amazing. I started to find articles, scholarly articles written on this. And apparently what I was doing was rewiring my brain. I was, you know, your brain fires in a certain way every time. And when you do an activity, it becomes easier and easier each time you do it. So every time I would look into the mirror and tell me to fuck off and tell me how much I hated myself, it was easier and easier every time. I believed it more and more and more. And it was so easy to be down on myself that I forgot how good it felt to be up on myself. So when I started to rewire my brain, it was literally changing the firing inside my brain. And I would look at myself and I would say, "No, man, you got some good things happening. There's a lot of good things. You got good people around you. You've got good support. Lots of wonderful things are happening to you." And I kept tripping, and I kept learning, and I kept doing it. And I was amazed. And I eventually gathered enough support, money wise and people wise, that I was able to move out of my apartment. I was able to progress as a human being, so that my relationships with other people weren't as harsh, I guess. They were a lot healthier. I started to figure out my temper control. I started to figure out other things. And by no means am I perfect. I still get angry. If I didn't get angry, I'm sure there would be something more wrong with me, right?
But sure. You
know, so things are happening to me at this time. I joined a group therapy session, which talk therapy is a very important thing. I believe it's one of the things that also helped me out. I say the sacred teacher was my number one thing, but talk therapy was a close second. There's no doubt I wouldn't be where I was today if I didn't take all of the steps that I took. So I joined the group, you know, and I did some things, and I kept learning about myself, kept doing what I needed to do to progress as forward as a human being. And as I said, I kept tripping, and eventually I moved out, and some wonderful things happened with that.
Can I ask you, what was the nature of the lessons that you learned about yourself from your experiences?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So this is, you know, maybe it's going to sound a little weird to some people, or a little, you know, so on the very first trip, I was laying there because I was in a pretty crazy spot. I didn't know how to even react. So I wasn't up and moving. I was in a I was laying there thinking to myself, and I said to myself, you know, John, what do you like to do? You know, what really interests you? What really piques your interest? And the first thing that came to my mind, and it's a little silly and people are going to wonder, but was drugs. And I, you know, and it a lot of people think that's something that should be kicked aside and not spoken about. But I believe that drugs are an important part of society. They're an important part of evolution. They're an important part of our everyday life. And when I got married and had kids, I pushed my love of substances to the side. And by the love of substances, I don't mean getting all messed up and going crazy. No, I mean like the chemistry, the reactions mm-hmm. inside your brain, the feelings that you get, the way they change your consciousness, and you're able to think do different things. So yeah. During that trip, I said, you know, like, what do you like? And I like drugs. So I started the next day, I started to research it more, started to get back into it, joined some Facebook groups and did mm-hmm. some things, you know, and did some things to progress my knowledge of drugs back to where it used to be, because I used to be very pro cannabis, and I would push for, you know, legalization, or I would tell everybody about the wonderful benefits of cannabis. And mm-hmm. over time that started to slowly fade away, and it wasn't part of my image or my identity anymore. So I decided to bring that back and not be ashamed, you know, let people know who I am and what really piques my interest and mm-hmm. what makes me excited as a human being. So yeah, the next day I started to do some things to move myself ahead in that manner, and it was beautiful. I found myself again in that. The next thing I learned, I'd rather probably not talk about, because I'm a pretty open guy, but this one's just for me. So
sure, definitely.
You know, yeah. You know, like I'm willing to say a lot, but this one was just for me.
Yeah, right. But, on.
And I guess I've spoke about the way it rewired me, the way it made me look at myself as a more positive person, the way mm-hmm. it helped control my anger. And, mm-hmm. you know, like say I'm waiting in line at the grocery store. I used to be uptight and anxious and really, really not wanting to be there. And now I could slow my thoughts down and say, wait a second, like what's wrong with this? Just look around, take a couple breaths, you know, calm yourself. Just do it. This is what you do. This is what human beings do. You gotta just, you know, deal with it. And eventually I taught myself how to react differently to a lot of different situations where I would have been in a bad spot before. So I guess in a sense, if you wanted to say, like, that is where the story could have ended, but by no means did my story end there. My story mm-hmm. it's got a whole nother chapter to it, and that was my spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And all through my life, as I said, I knew I was different, and I searched for answers, but I didn't know how to find these answers. I did use drugs recreationally and self-medicating to try to figure out myself at different times, and I never, ever could. So I always felt like I needed to find a spiritual side, but if you're on a search for spirituality, it needs to really hit you. You can't live off somebody else's spiritual awakening, or you can't live off somebody else's teachings unless it actually fits with what you believe.
Uh-huh. So sure.
I was floating around my whole life, not having a spiritual side. I didn't believe in it. If it wasn't measurable and it didn't have anything to do with the textbooks that I had read or whatever else, none of it existed. It didn't matter. My five senses were the only thing on earth that mm-hmm. were, you know, could lead me in any way. If it, mm-hmm. you know, if I didn't sense it, it didn't exist. And mm-hmm. that's a pretty foolhardy way to live, no doubt. But, you know, a lot of people in today's day and age have been told that that's what the absolute truth is. And yeah. it's a, you know, like I find or feel perhaps that there's a lot of mental instability due to the fact that many people nowadays aren't a spiritual being, because I believe we're four pieces in a pie, a mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual being all in one. And if you don't have one of those, if you're in bad shape physically, you're probably going to be worn down mentally. If you're in right. bad shape sure. emotionally, you're probably going to be worn down physically or whatever else, right? So
yeah.
if you're completely missing the spiritual aspect of your life, there's a big piece of you that's gone, and you can't actually be a whole person. And this is where my story perhaps gets a little weird or a little different. Like some people would follow along up until this point and say, okay, you know, perhaps these medications or the psilocybin worked in such a way that, yeah, instead of masking a problem, maybe it did help and maybe it did rewire. But now is what really, truly, I believe what saved my soul. So when I went on my mushroom trip in August of 2014, the one where I was in my dad's basement, I woke up the next day, did some things to change my life, as I already said. And a week or two later, I met a girl, and I met her online. She was a school buddy of my brother's, but I met her on Plenty of Fish and we started to chat. And when I moved, she was pretty close to my town, so we started to hang out a little bit. And I was very intrigued by her story. When she was younger, in her teen years, she actually suffered from some pretty severe seizures and eventually qualified for a brain surgery, which was fantastic. And it cleared her right up. For the very moment she woke up from her surgery, all of her seizures were gone. And it's a remarkable story. I'm so glad that it happened for her, for more reasons than one, because when I finally got to meet her 15 or 16 years after her surgery, we would hang out and we would be cuddling on the couch and my hand would be drawn to her scar, to the crack in her skull. It was just drawn there. It was like a magical thing. And she always wondered why I had my hand there and I didn't know. I just, I just always said it's supposed to be there, you know, like I would always keep my hand there. It was so intriguing for me. So in August of 2014, I was commuting home from work and I was rubbing my head in an area that I always rub my head in when I was upset. And I wondered to myself, what is this? Like, why am I rubbing my head always in this one area? And it started to hit me all of a sudden that my head had a crack in it. My skull was clearly cracked. And I started to go over my history as a child and what it could have been. And there's no doubt that when I was 8 years old, I was severely injured in a swimming pool and I was busted open for 16 stitches. And I was taken to the ER and they sewed me up real good. And the doc did an excellent job on that. You can barely see my scar. But the problem is they sent me away and they didn't scan me. They didn't look at any imaging. They just stitched me up and I was pushed out and that was it.
Wow.
And I was an 8 year old boy and these guys didn't tell my parents about anything. They didn't suspect that there could have been anything wrong. And
oh my.
Yeah. But this was in 1990. And when that happened in 1990, the brain medicine and concussion information wasn't the same.
Right.
Than it is now. Right. So do I blame them? A little bit, but you know, what was all the information there for them to suspect that something could affect me? Probably not.
Right.
You know, but anyway, so I'm rubbing my head thinking to myself, you know, like this is kind of weird. Like I just found something out about myself that perhaps could change a lot of things. Right. So I get home. And the synchronicities in my life start to happen. I didn't even know what that meant at the time. But after a few of them hit, you eventually start to look into what's happening to you. But I get home shortly after that, and there's a video on YouTube about a hockey player who eventually killed himself because of the concussions and different things that he was battling with that caused him depression and certain things. And I said, holy smokes, you know? Like, if a concussion can lead an adult into depression and a confused mental state, what could it do to a child? You know, what could this have possibly done to me? So I start to look into severe concussions and frontal lobe damage and different things in children. And I start to learn, like, holy smokes, this fits me to a T. These are things that I can't pass up, like the fits of rage and the uncontrollable anger and different things like that and different ways that I would react in a situation seemed so totally appropriate with what would have been a brain injury. And I, I eventually went to my mom just with some things because I don't remember much before I was 8 years old, and I don't even remember much up until I was 12 either. Mm-hmm. But I went to my mom, and she almost put her hands over her mouth, and it's like, that explains so much, you know?
Yeah.
So even her believed that quite possibly I could have had a brain injury as an 8 year old that,
right,
you know, led to things happening on later in life. So that's something that happens. And one thing that really struck me was that if a child is injured in the brain, it could be actually a lot harder for that child than if the same thing happened to an adult, because they say an adult has already learned everything that they need to learn, and that if that happened, they could just relearn a skill if they, you know, if it was, if the hard drive got wiped out, I guess.
Sure.
You could say, right?
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as an 8 year old, if your hard drive gets wiped out, you don't know all of your tasks, and you don't even know what tasks are supposed to be learned because they're not there. And this is what led to my alienation, because I knew that there was something that was missing from my brain. But how do you ever know, or how do you ever tell somebody that there's something missing from your brain? Because that doesn't make sense. So yeah. I was a smart enough guy, and I progressed, and I could fit in close enough. But there were some times in my teen years where people called me on my strange behaviors. And still to this day, it's kind of upsetting that that happened. But anyway, so I'm doing my research. I find out that, you know, perhaps my hard drive could have been wiped and different things like that. So the synchronicities start to keep flowing, and, you know, like different little things. And I start to look into spiritual things a little bit more and different things. And I say, you know, like, I'm going to dive right into this, and I'm going to see what I can do.
So, John, you've spoken a lot in this interview about how you feel guided by synchronicities. And I would like you to maybe give an example of one of those synchronicities that have guided you to where you are right now.
Yeah, sounds good, actually. Our meeting was a synchronistic event for me, actually. I felt very compelled on the day that I posted to the Terrence McKenna Experience Facebook page. There was a few small details that I picked up on throughout that day, and I felt very, very compelled to post that evening. And when I posted, actually, Jonathan was one of the first people to reply to my message and like my page. And you actually sent me a wonderful Facebook message, and here we are today. So,
right on, right on. Yeah. That's really cool. And, you know, it's just the kind of stories that I really love to get out there. And so, you know, if there's anything that the other listeners and other people on the Facebook groups that I tend to troll looking for interesting stories, you know, if you got something that you want to share, if you have a story about how psychedelics have changed your mind about something or improved a relationship, this we're really interested in hearing them. So I really, really appreciate that you did reach out, and it was so cool to find you.
And I appreciate you reaching out to me.
Right on. So I guess from what I'm hearing you describe is you're kind of saying that you feel like these experiences with psilocybin were sort of able to help you maybe rebuild this part of your brain that wasn't really functioning and kind of get into a state of like more equilibrium. I'm interested in hearing about how that experience has altered your relationship with, say, your ex-wife and your kids.
Okay, that's wonderful. Yeah. So before, as I said, I was quite an angry man. I wasn't a very happy fella, and a lot of things, you know, I would get angry at my kids. I would elevate to a level that no human being should ever be at with their children. And that was one of the most devastating things. Being angry at my kids wasn't devastating, but the reactions I felt afterwards, or the emotions I felt afterwards, were quite devastating. And it was saddening to me that I could be so mean to little creatures that just loved me without any regard for themselves. They loved me more than anything else, right? Like, and I would tear into them for reasons unknown, because I didn't know. Like, I really truly didn't know why I was so angry, but I was an angry man. And as these things would happen, or as I started to learn more about myself on psilocybin and to do different things, I started to slow down, and I could react differently. When my child would spill something on the floor, I knew that they were just being a kid and things happen. And still, like, mm-hmm. I don't get me wrong, I still get angry, but I don't fly off the handle and I don't lose control, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, things in that way, I can express my love and devotion to them, and we have a very close and magnetic bond. It's a beautiful thing. Whereas previously they still respected and loved me, but I didn't respect and love me for the way that I treated them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with my ex-wife, you know, like we separated, things maybe weren't the greatest when we separated, but you know, eventually I learned to deal with it and allow the feelings that I had for her to stay strong, but not a romantic passionate love, but a strong friendship, a strong, you know, love of a kindred spirit, really. Like we were really close, and we went through some crazy times together, and there's no doubt that each one of us needed each other in our lives. It's a magnificent thing that we have, right? So we have two beautiful children, but my ex and I, we never really didn't get along, but there were times when, you know, we wouldn't always see eye to eye, and I was perhaps a little stubborn, and I, of course, that's, you know, some people are built a little differently than others, but now, instead of getting angry with a lot of people or flying off the wall, I can sit and discuss my emotions in a calm, gentle manner. And, you know, like, I'm not trying to say that I'm perfect, because I'm not, but instead of being an angry man and bitter towards a lot of things, you know, like I wrote my ex-wife and her new boyfriend a lovely card at Christmas time saying that I appreciated both of them. And, you know, like, so that's not something that maybe adults do to, or like men do to their ex-wife's boyfriend who's living with their children. I don't know, but I certainly did it because I felt it was a necessary thing to let them know that I appreciated them.
Yeah.
And my children have no idea that there would even be a chance for conflict in a relationship between me and my ex-wife. My son has asked me to come over to their house for sleepovers. He's asked me to play wrestle with my ex-wife's boyfriend, which, you know, like that's kind of fun. You know, like there's no way either one of us would ever get on the floor to do that. But you know, for him to feel comfortable enough to invite me into that, you know, it's a nice thing. And I find it quite nice, because they don't even understand that there could be a possibility for something to be wrong. Our relationship is so wonderful, you know, that's not just me. That's my ex-wife as well. We both respect and, you know, want the best for our children, but without the psilocybin, I wouldn't be where I am today in terms of mental and emotional development. It would have harmed me a lot more, and I probably wouldn't I don't even know if I'd be alive without it, you know, like I said, I would last till 50, but you never know. So
psilocybin saved my life.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Yeah, it certainly did.
Right on. That's yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. So
what's next for you?
Well, see, I've passed up a couple different job promotions in recent times, and the reason I passed those up was because I've only been perfectly well for perhaps, it hasn't even been a year that I've been what I would consider to be a strong, healthy individual. That happened on May 1st. It was a life-changing moment. But up until this moment, or at this moment in time, I've recently passed up two job opportunities. One was quite a lucrative package, but I would have had to move away from my children for just a couple hours away, but that was still too much, because right now I can see my kids at any moment, any time that I would like, but being away from them, even for money, it was not worth it. I know there's more important things in life than money. And recent, you know, most definitely. And some people don't see that. And, you know, most recently I passed up a job opportunity. I actually took a job position, worked in it for a little bit, and then I turned it down because I wasn't feeling it. I didn't have the passion. I didn't want to partake in that and try to climb a corporate ladder that I didn't necessarily have any value for. I want to eventually, you know, it comes back to drugs, but I don't want to do anything illegal. I would like to open my own business someday, you know, selling different plants and different mm-hmm. things like that, you know, like psychoactive substances, nothing illegal, different legal herbs and different things like that, you know, have some ornamental cacti and different things like that and sacred things, you know, and, you know, whatever else. But I would like to open a storefront and be my own man someday and try to do that. But, and I totally believe that I'm capable of doing anything that I want, because it's only been a year and I've already been able to pass up two promotions. So I believe now that I'm capable of anything. And I don't say that in an egotistical way, but mm-hmm. I went through hell on earth for quite a number of years, and it has now, I've now been released from my mental prison. And after being released from my mental prison, I found that I was quite capable. I learned the hard way of life. I didn't have anything really handed to me on a platter. I made a lot of mistakes, and I started at the bottom in a lot of ways, and I had to climb and scratch and claw. And people would still look at me and say perhaps that I am on the bottom still, because I don't make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, I don't have a lot of material possessions, but that's not what matters to me. What matters to me is my happiness. And I think that because of the mushrooms, I have found that, right? So, yeah.
That's wonderful, man. Yeah. That's so wonderful. I had a very similar experience, not with as much of a huge change, because I don't think that I know people, very close people to me, who have had suffered from very serious depression. But for the most part, I've been lucked out with a good disposition. But I was in a place where I just was kind of being like chewed up and sort of ground down by the corporate grind. And I also had a psilocybin experience, and it was after, you know, probably more than a decade of not using any psychedelics. And it was really amazing to me how different it was than when I was in my 20s, because when I was in my 20s, there was a lot of like visual experiences and very weird things, and, you know, meeting aliens and traveling to the stars. And but when I in my mid 30s, the experience was completely different, and it was all about like, how can I be a better person, and how can I interact more lovingly with the people around me. And it was all about improving who I was to my family and my loved ones. It was pretty miraculous. And I know my son, when we were sitting around the dinner table, and we told the kids that their mom was going to go to an ayahuasca ceremony, and she had never been before. I'd been drinking ayahuasca for about a year, and my son just like, he goes, "Oh, good. And then when you come home, mommy doesn't have to be angry anymore either."
Nice, nice. Well, maybe not nice, but no, I like that.
But you know, it was just
because it's obviously evident to them what the changes can do, right? And my kids, I don't know how old your children are, but my children are 8 and 7. Mm-hmm. And
mine are very close to the age of yours. Yeah.
Nice, nice. And I haven't, due to respect for my ex-wife, who didn't want me to speak about it much, I haven't spoken much about it. But my children know that something happened to Daddy that he's not able to talk to them about. Mm-hmm. But I have. Eventually, I'm going to allow them to the knowledge of what I went through, and I think it'll help them as a better people. But you know, like right now, they know that old Daddy is gone and new Daddy is much better, you know. Yeah. and how do I explain to them what happened to me, that I ate a fungus and that it changed my complete outlook on the world? You know, like, that sounds a little silly. Like, it's something they could probably imagine, because kids have a wonderful imagination, but they couldn't even comprehend what I had been through, right? So you know, but you know, we have some sacred cacti, and we're tending to them, and we'll see what happens in the future, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun to be able to make, like, one of the things that I see in the work that I'm doing is to help develop traditions and just, like, create community culture, right? So, like, well, exactly what you're saying is, how do we talk to our kids about these experiences in a way that they can get their mind around or grasp or understand? Because, you know, you can't go into the chemistry of, you know, how the brain functions and receptors and neurochemicals and all those sorts of things. And, or, you know, I was out of my body and aliens were doing psychic therapy on me or whatever it is that happens in your experience. Right. But, you know, one of the things that I look to is storytelling and, fairy tales. And, you know, it's easy to, for kids to hear, watch a Disney movie that's about, you know, the fairy godmother, or, you know, being visited by fairies or elves or gnomes or whatever. And, but those are great analogies for experiences, you know, that idea of like the fairy circle of mushrooms. And this has been always been deep in our history, this idea, this connectivity of these substances with the spirits of nature. And I think that's that could be a really good way to describe these experiences to young kids.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And that's a good way to look at it. Most definitely. One day we were at breakfast and I started to explain what some people believe the origins of Christmas were from, you know, with the pine tree, with the Amanita muscaria underneath and different little things and the flying reindeer and all this stuff. And I started to explain, like, this stuff came from the legends of a mushroom, you know, like
Santo is a shaman.
Yeah. You know, like, and you know, like, just to, you know, whether they wanted to believe that or whether daddy was just telling a crazy story, you know, at least I felt that I was able to bring that onto the table. Right. So it is a very difficult thing for me to sit down and give my kids any real concrete stuff on right now. It's more, you know, we'll skirt around the issue and pretend that it's maybe something more make-believe or mystical and magical I'm not even pretending when I pretend it's mystical and magical, right? Like, because it clearly is. Yeah, there's no doubt, you know?
Yeah, I talk to people about this stuff, and one of the things that I see about it is we have all these stories that we tell our children and, you know, magical beings that inhabit their world, like Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy and stuff. And, you know, the thing about these medicines is they point to the fact that magic is real. That's what I think. Yeah. And, you know, we don't need like pretend stories when we can tell them, like, you know, someday you can come with me to the fairy world.
Yeah, for sure. And that's beautiful. And there's some things, like I had mentioned earlier, and I kind of stumbled up when I was speaking about it because I didn't know what I should release or not, but synchronicities. And there's certain things, the synchronistic things that have happened to me, that they're almost the mystical, magical thing that I don't even have to pull from the cubensis world. I can actually live these things now and show them little magical things, you know, like, and it's, you know, if you can point out the little magic in an everyday event, it can change your outlook and your child's outlook and, you know, different things. Like, I started to say everything happens for a reason, and then little things would happen around here that would lead to something bigger. And all of a sudden my son would say, "See, everything happens for a reason," you know, and we would all start to pick up on these little magical things that would happen to us when we were together. And then we could put them into a little fairy tale of our own, essentially, you know, like we're writing our own story right now together.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful little thing. So,
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've ever read the Neverending Story, but, I mean, many people have seen the movie. But the book is that the sort of big lesson of that book is that we create our world through imagination. And so at the end, have you seen the movie before?
No, I haven't even.
Oh, it came out in the 1980s. It's really old. But it's about this kid who's kind of a fat kid, and he gets beat up at school a lot. But he's also, you know, and he's not really very good at school. He's kind of dumb and fails a lot of classes, but he just like loves to read, and he's always in his imagination. And he ends up like stealing this book from this bookstore, and it's this big old tome called The Neverending Story. And he, as he's reading the book, the story is coming to life. As he reads the book, there's a world behind the pages that he slowly begins to realize is an actual world that he can interact with. Ha. And that they're hearing him and he's a part of the story. And then there's this sort of cataclysmic destruction of the world that occurs at the end of the story. And then he is given the task of rebuilding the world with his dreams and imaginations.
Ha, wonderful.
And it's an amazing story. Totally worth it. You should check it out.
I should. And to be honest with you, it sounds like I was the main character in that yeah. book. Because, you know, essentially what I was doing was reading a story, the story of my own life, and it was kind of bland and blah. And then when I did realize that there was something happening behind what we can really see, like, and I truly do believe that there is way more to life than meets the eye. As soon as I started to realize that, when I picked up on that, I felt I was able to control my own reality a lot more and essentially build my own world through my hopes and dreams. You know, like, before I used to have a world that I had created for myself that was in a negative. Like I said, I woke up and there was a cloud over my head right away, right off the start. But if you can wake up and you have a sunshine, like a rainbow over top of you instead of a cloud, you're able to write your story in a different way. If something happens to you and somebody, you know, what you could say maybe would tick you off, but you can use it as a learning experience and smile through it all. Mm-hmm. You rewrote your whole story. The reaction to any event can either be a negative or a positive one. And if you take the positive one out of it, it's a beautiful thing. And you really can write your own story.
Yeah.
And it's very nice. So.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, we're just getting about to the end of an hour. Is there anything else that you want to add at all?
Perhaps just that I am med free now. It's been almost 2 years that I've been med free and I have stabilized on the upside. I am very happy now. I control all my own thoughts and I feel good about myself being med free.
Cool. That's great, man. This is a beautiful story. I'm so glad that you wanted to share it with our listeners and with me. I feel blessed, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you know, it's relatively speaking, you and I are not too far away from each other. As we were talking before, the area you live is someplace that my mother and used to take me all the time when I was a kid, and my wife and I actually fell in love there. So it's very close by. We should get together sometime.
We most definitely should, Jonathan.
Great.
Yeah. Well,
thank you so much, John, for being on the show, and many blessings to you in your new life that you're imagining into existence.
Thanks. Safe travels to you as well.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.